1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.
A sweet harmony will set us free and leave our
Artichoke Music, Satori Men's Chorus, and Mark Bosnian will present Songs of Community, a benefit for KBOO Community Radio, Thursday, November 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. This concert celebrates Portland's love for local music and local community radio. Tickets are available in advance from Brown Paper Tickets or at the door. All proceeds benefit KBOO. To learn more, go to the KBOO website and click under Community Events on the right side of the homepage. That's KBOO.fm. Songs of Community, a benefit for KBOO Community Radio.
Given how rapidly technology is changing, it's hard sometimes to tell whether the change is for the better or for the worse. One current problem in Portland is a direct result of the growth of the tech industry, rising rents, and gentrification. Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. for future trends in technology and the current housing crisis in Portland. The final part in Startup City, how the new tech boom is changing Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Dear listeners, happy Armistice Day. We are here on KBOO. We have, tonight on Out Loud, we have some fabulous guests. We have Anthony Hudson with us.
Oh, do I say hi?
Hi, Alan. I'm still stunned from the cold outside.
Oh, it's wonderful, isn't it?
I can't feel my lungs.
A little bit later, we'll have Jim Clay, Carlton Rounds with Let's Kick Ass PDX. Excited to talk about that. But Anthony, welcome to late autumn, I guess.
Oh, this lovely time of the year when I start to freeze and I bust out my Costco space heater. Thank God.
Yes, and I'm very, very lucky. I needed a new coat and I happened to be drawn to a consignment thrift shop on Monday, and it was exactly the coat I wanted and exactly the right size, just hanging there.
Harmonic convergence.
Totally $16.
Oh, wow, well life done.
And then the next day, whew.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Winter's here, so I'm very excited.
I'm excited for, I guess, Thanksgiving to be here and my show to be here, but other than that, I can't abide by this cold. I can't do it.
Well, what is your show? What are we doing? What are we doing with you this month?
I don't know. Well, so I have a show coming up Thursday, next Thursday, November 20th, at the Alberta Rose Theater, and it's called Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World. And this is my big grant show. I got a RAT grant from the Regional Arts and Culture Council to do the show. And I've been working on it for a year, and now it's bizarre that it's finally almost here.
Exciting.
Yeah. Panic is another word. But I'm very, very happy to get to finally premiere this thing and share it with Portland and see what happens.
Wonderful. I have my ticket. I'm very excited. Oh,
thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So tell us about Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World.
Well, to give, I was going to say viewers, but I remembered you don't have cameras here because this is new media. You only have microphones, which I forgot to get my hair cut. I always get my hair cut before I do your show, and I forgot to do it today. So hopefully the camera will be forgiving. For listeners that aren't familiar, Carla Rossi is kind of my drag project that I've been doing around Portland for the last 4 years. And she's my way of confronting whiteness in myself and in the world at large. I'm half white and half Native American, and I get distressed by a lot of the things I see in everyday life. So Carla's my way of like making fun of it. I don't enjoy anything unless if it makes me laugh. I don't see value in anything unless if I get a laugh out of it. And so Carla is my way of making jokes about it, about oppression and privilege and things operating in our world while still being able to laugh about it, because, you know, what's the point if we're not going to laugh? So Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World now is what happens when I take Carla and I put her in 1920s, 1930s Germany. So the show is all about Weimar Berlin. It actually kind of uses Weimar Berlin as a jumping off point to talk about what's going on today in Portland and in the United States at large. And so it's kind of a, the thing I do with Carla is she says one thing while doing the complete opposite. So this show kind of does a one over on the audience too. It's not exactly a throwback to the full cabarets of that era in Berlin in 1920 and 1930. I mean, the place was full of cabarets. They put on amazing shows. And this isn't me recreating those. This is me doing some songs by like Kurt Weill, Bertolt Brecht's collaborations, like the Three Penny Opera and Mahogany, and then putting my own spin on them. And my ultimate goal with this project is to have people, you know, see what happens when I sing these songs that deal with war and like xenophobia, racism, sexism, and all kinds of insane topics. What happens when they're then viewed in this modern context? But
what is it that you're seeing in Weimar Germany that you want to pull out of?
What was that?
What is there that you're seeing in Weimar Germany that you want to be pulling out to look at?
For me, I think what really I was so drawn to the era, why I was so drawn to the era, is the fact that Weimar Berlin and Germany in particular there was this insane progressiveness to it. It was a very liberal kind of paradise. But at the same time, there was a paragraph 175 or paragraph 175, which made homosexuality illegal. It was criminalized. It was actually sodomy that was criminalized. But like that happened. And yet there was this huge flourishing scene for homosexuals, too. Like there were almost 40 gay bars in Berlin at the time. And yet there's so much fear of immigrants at the same, like simultaneously there. I mean, and then you look at what happened, how the economy was collapsing. Hitler came into power, said, "I'll make this all better." And then he chose an enemy. They singled out a group of people. And then fear took over. And suddenly this kind of fairy tale, like how we think about Weimar Berlin, we all think like Cabaret, Liza Minnelli, Bob Fosse. Now it's Emma Stone and Alan Cumming doing it on Broadway. But when we think of it as this kind of fairy tale dreamland, it's really remarkable to confront the reality of what happened to Berlin and what happened to Germany and how all of a sudden this not all of a sudden, but how over time, and yet kind of quickly in time, because the Weimar Republic was only around for a matter of years, it changed over into the Third Reich. So I'm fascinated with the similarities that I see between our cultures. We're slowly, last year when I wrote the grant, DOMA had just been repealed, but a day after that, they'd also canceled out like a key part of the Voting Rights Act, the Supreme Court did, which kind of was a really bad thing in terms of people being able to get, you know, the ability to go and vote, particularly minorities. So that affected how I was writing this grant, that had just happened, that there's this terrible fear of immigrants in the United States. We have the border fence that I keep seeing people are working on the border fence. That comes up in the show. Carla actually goes and helps build the border fence because the show goes back and forth between back in Berlin and Portland in America today. And I just really want to explore those similarities between the two cultures and time periods. Just to say, like, I'm not saying that Hitler is going to come to power in the United States, but I just want to do kind of a, isn't this interesting? Let's maybe check ourselves before we wreck ourselves, you know?
Why don't we listen to a little music? Alabama song?
Oh, yeah, I love Alabama songs. So this is a song that I will be singing in the show. And the track that we have is sung by Lotte Linja, and she was Kurt Weill's wife. And she's kind of the goddess that watches over this show. A lot of the show came through with me listening to her music.
Great.
I tell you, we must die. We don't find the next pretty boy.
I tell you, we must die. I tell you, we must die.
I tell you, I tell you, I tell you, we must die.
Little dollar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh,
we must find the next little dollar. For if we don't find the next little dollar,
I tell you we must die. I tell you we must die.
I tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die.
All right, here we are on Out Loud Radio. Thanks for being with us tonight, everybody. I'm here with Anthony Hudson. We're talking about Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World, coming up next Thursday.
Oh, my gosh.
At the fabulous Alberta Rose Theater.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Alan? I feel I've been moved to the opposite end of the room away from you.
We're going to hope that technically this makes sense, even if okay. We're tiny dots to one another in this in this space. Alberta Rose Theater, 30th in Alberta. Some shows are seated. Some are partially seated. Do you know what you're...
This is if there's a seat, you can take it. It's all seated, general admission.
All right. I was remembering a second ago that Christopher Isherwood, when I was young, and I had this... You know, I think when I first moved here, I had this idea that I would read every book in the gay and lesbian book section at Powell's. And for a long time, actually, you know, I was doing all
you were
right.
Working your way through them.
And Christopher Isherwood was one of the authors.
Uh-huh.
Although he was also in the general lit section.
And the Buddhism section, probably,
that's
too.
That's right, with his guru book. I think it's called Guru. A man and his guru, I think. So he wrote Berlin Stories.
Yes.
And that is the basis for Cabaret.
It is. It was, there's a character named Sally Bowles, who we all know and love as Liza Minnelli. But she was the inspiration she was somebody that he knew in real life in Berlin at the time. And then they've made a play, I Am a Camera, that was about him in Berlin hanging out with Sally. And then that was turned into the musical Cabaret. It's funny that you should bring that up because, you know, I was the kid that grew up watching Cabaret. I loved it. That's kind of maybe where I first got this idea of the fairy tale kind of presentation of Weimar Berlin and this, like, you know, this doomed metropolis. But what I wanted to do with this show is I have to confront Cabaret. So we do, I won't say which song, but we do one Cabaret number at the beginning of the show just to banish the elephant in the room. We're going to exorcise Cabaret from this show just right away in the beginning. But the jumping off point that I use with that is that basically, Carla Rossi was the inspiration for Sally Bowles. Carla Rossi was in Berlin at this time, and she knew Christopher Isherwood. And there is a point where I do read a passage when he describes Carla, well, Sally, and it basically is Carla. All the way down to the sentence, her face was powdered dead white. And it talks about how she sang badly, and she had a weird expression, and her arms just hung dead at her sides. Come on, people. It's Carla Rossi we're talking about.
You mentioned Portland, taking a look at Weimar and thinking about not only this culture we're in as a whole, but our local culture.
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking there? What are you seeing?
So I'm really interested in the fact that we used to have, I guess the short answer is look at Division Street. And I also, you know, I've spent some time, I used to be employed on Alberta. So I've seen firsthand what happens with gentrification. And it's really interesting that just recently the Portland Mercury published these maps of gentrification in North Portland. And over the past four decades, you can watch African Americans just be completely pushed out of North Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like I mean, that's been happening for a while in Portland. Portland's changed a lot. I mean, up until the last couple of decades, we got the Pearl District, and now it's kind of division is slowly shifting, and a lot of Portland is changing. But it seems like, I feel as a queer performer in Portland, that now a lot of the gay parts of town and the gayborhoods, you know, have dissolved. And it's interesting to me looking at this show and researching a time where there were 38 gay bars in Berlin in, you know, 90 years ago. And I can probably count on my hand the number of gay bars we have in Portland. Whereas when I moved here, there were a lot more. You know, Vaseline Alley is now like a McMenamins, basically. Red Cap, where I used to perform, is now a hallway. And that's where I got my start. That's where Carla really kind of took off and got her chops hosting shows. Now you can get ramen there. Designer ramen, I hear. So I'm interested in what happens when the city is booming with new growth, with, frankly, yuppies coming into the town and rents going up. A lot of the people that I know barely have jobs or means to support themselves, you know, as well as the people that are coming into town. And everybody's holding on to whatever place they have to live in because the rent is becoming impossible here. And that also, that too reminds me and makes me think about what was happening in Berlin at the time with, in terms of inflation that was going on there. There were moments in Berlin where people would take, because of the exchange rate with marks and with inflation was just so insane that people would take paper marks in wheelbarrows out into the street and burn them to stay warm. Meanwhile, the city was booming in the tourist trade because it was so cheap for people to come to Berlin and just go crazy. So it's just one similarity I found that I thought. I mean, we're not that extreme here, but I think it's funny that the city is changing so much and so many people really could use a little more money here that I know. And yet there's still room for people to come in and open artisanal soap and apothecary shops while closing down all these bars and dives that a lot of the, you know, natives, for lack of a better word, are used to.
Do you think there's any sort of I'm just gonna phrase it this way and see what happens. Do you have a sense there's a gentrification of queer performance in Portland?
You know, I think nationwide there is, actually. And I have to be careful because one of my dear friends did win RuPaul's Drag Race a couple of seasons back. But I think that show and that attention that drag is getting now, that's kind of happening to drag. Drag is becoming a little bit more of a pageant-based medium than it is something that's really addressing ideas of gender and taking apart gender, which I think really good queer performance can do. And I don't know entirely what to make of that. In Portland, when I first started, you know, when Carla first came to be, she was part of this group called the Tampon Troupe. And we were sloppy, messy, but we did a lot of creative and kind of pushing boundaries work. We were really influenced by Chi Chi and Changa and Sissy Boy, who had dismantled a couple years before we came to. And there was a big scene for crazy gender bending drag in Portland. Now it's more about what RuPaul's Drag Race Queen is coming to town, and then we get to do shows around that. I host a lot of those shows, but yeah, I would like to see a lot more drag that's really pushing the boundaries of gender. And I don't think some of the RuPaul's Drag Race kind of stuff, I think, really reaffirms those boundaries. That's why I love work that I see, like Cayenne Pepper, Pepper Pepper's Critical Mascara that she did at Time Based Art, was absolutely fantastic. And it was nice to see all these performers in Portland coming together and doing stuff where they were just pushing the boundaries of aesthetics, gender, and everything, all in a wonderful little Vogue ball.
I've always thought that, I mean, since I moved here 20-some years ago, that Portland isn't very good at creating stars. If you want to be a star, you leave. Mm-hmm. You just leave. So it doesn't draw in as many folks from, you know, sort of more glamorous performance circles that you might think. You really have to be willing to just keep working here more than anything else.
You have to keep working. You have to sometimes resign yourself to the reality of the day job. And then you have to tour, which is something I'm learning.
But are you going to take Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World on the road?
There are talks. There are talks that's, that might be happening. I'm working with this amazing pianist in the show. The show isn't just Carla Rossi. It's also my accompanist, Maria Chobon. She's this gangster pianist. She is completely amazing. She has helped me shape this show so much. And what she's done is really remarkable. Anytime I say, Maria, I want to do this song, every time we have rehearsal, I add in a song. And, you know, she begrudgingly goes along with it. And then when I come back for the next rehearsal, she's taken that song and she's turned it into this brilliant mashup and completely read my mind. And we've talked about touring this. I would like to take it farther next year. What I'm doing with this one performance is I want this to be an incubator. Originally, I'd proposed it as a two-night run. And then for various reasons, I moved it down to a one-night show. And now I'm thinking of this as, while it will be a full production, and this is going to be about an hour and a half production with song, dance, monologue, Marie on piano, me doing, you know, whatever Carla's doing, and the amazing lady dance troupe, the Dolly Pops, while we're doing that, it really is an incubator to see what can be done with the show, how audiences react to it, and then see how we can make it even bigger and take it farther next year. So next year, I would like to take it to San Francisco. I'd like to take it to Seattle. Who knows, maybe Austin, New York. But yeah.
Exciting. It is Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World next Thursday, Alberta Rose Theater.
Next Thursday, November 20th. Doors at 7, show at 8.
AlbertaRoseTheater.com.
AlbertaRoseTheater.com. You can get tickets. You can also read more about the show at thecarlarossi.com, my new fancy website.
What's next for you after Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World?
Oh, see, that's the thing is when you've been working on something for a year, you don't think about what's after. Like, I think this whole time I've been thinking, like, this date, November 20th, has been this horrific flaming sword burning in my calendar, like the one in front of the Garden of Eden, and I can't go past it. So the second that this show is over, it's going to be a lot of buffets, a lot of drinks, a lot of time on Netflix. Oh, God, can I say that, or do we have to pay them money? Are we an unofficial sponsor of Netflix now? but no, I'm going to be doing a great, immediately I'm doing a New Year's Eve festival, or New Year's Eve party, and it's called Hello Hello. We've done it the last 2 years at Rature, Samuel Thomas and I, and we're doing a new one for New Year's this year, and it's going to be great fun. And then after that, the big next thing I have coming up, I'm doing the Austin International Drag Festival next year in May. So yeah.
All right, exciting. Let's hear one more song. What do you want it to be?
How about, so the show is really dark. I forgot to say that. It's a really fun show. It's a Carla show, but it does have a little darkness. And I'd like to listen to the Army song. It's by Raul Julia and Bill Nighy. It's by Kurt Weill. And this is a recording from the movie Mack the Knife that was an adaptation of the Threepenny Opera. And it hints at kind of the darker militaristic vibe that my show takes on after the glitter is settled.
All right. Thank you, Anthony Hudson. Carla Rossi Sings the End of the World next Thursday, Alberta Rose Theater. We'll be back with Carlton Rounds and Jim Clay of Let's Kick Ass PDX.
Johnny joined up and Jimmy was there,
and George had a sergeant's rating.
Don't give your right name, the army doesn't care.
Keep on marching, war is fascinating.
Let's all go bombing, give off the army. We'll march from Cape to Pole.
We'll meet a darker race,
we'll fight them face to face.
Cause it is clear we're better,
we kill them, it doesn't matter.
We'll chop them up and make from them a piece of tartar.
warmed up on a gallon of gin. Jimmy didn't have enough blankets, while George just punched them both on the chin and told them the army can't afford it.
Let's all go bombing, live off the army. We'll march from Cape to Pole.
We'll meet a darker race, we'll fight them face to face, cause it is clear we're better. We kill them, it doesn't matter.
We'll chop them up and then from them I'll be scared.
Johnny is missing, Jimmy is dead, and George went crazy with the shooting. But blood is blood, and red is bloody red, and the army goes on and on recruiting.
Let's all go bombing, live off the army. We'll march from Cape to Pole. We'll meet a darker race, we'll fight them next to face.
But it will be. Is this for me? Okay. Welcome back to Out Loud. I'm Alan. That was a little bit of Kurt Vile. And that's Carla Rossi sings The End of the World next Thursday at the Alberta Rose Theater. Thanks to Anthony Hudson. We have Jim Clay and Carlton Rounds here. Their organization is Let's Kick Ass PDX.
Welcome. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Why don't each of you introduce yourselves first? Tell our dear listeners who you are.
Well, I'm Jim Clay. I have a long professional bio here that I'm going to try to not touch on too much, other than to say that I'm retired right now. I'm 67 years old. I've worked in human services for 35 years, and that includes some significant time spent in professional AIDS service organizations. I was a founding member and executive director of the Willamette AIDS Council in Eugene, and I was executive director of the Ryan White HIV Services Council in Portland. I could go on this. I think more importantly, I would say that I am affected by HIV and AIDS in that I've lived in the community that it has most touched, and it has touched my home. And I am a widow, and that's a really significant aspect of it. I've also seen the promise and the power of bringing community together, and it's a big, significant part of what we're doing and working to found Let's Kick Ass PDX.
Thank you. Thanks. Hi, my name is Carlton Rounds, and I'm HIV positive, so I've been living with the virus for quite a number of years. I'm 48. I came to Oregon years ago to go to school, and fell in love with it from the East Coast. And at that time, I remember some of my friends who were working in the theater in Portland begin to get ill. That had a big impact on me, and I went on to do national and international and also local work in human rights around HIV and diversity. Started my own nonprofit, helping send people living with HIV to do international service because I thought they would be great in the field. And was really motivated this past year after finding out about our mother organization, which started in San Francisco, letskickass.org in San Francisco. Met the founder who introduced me to Jim. Ironically, Jim and I were both going to San Francisco to be part of this movement, not realizing we were from the same city. And Jim and I came together and decided that we wanted to start a chapter in Portland. So here we are.
Amazing. You have to go 800 miles to meet somebody who lives six blocks away.
Literally six blocks.
Well, it's a good thing that you did. It's a good thing that you did. Tell us about Let's Kick Ass PDX.
Well, I'll first mention that Let's Kick Ass PDX is not an agency, it is not a movement. We did not deliver direct services. This is not about services. This is about building community, building the movement. We are the Portland, Oregon Metro chapter of a national grassroots movement. We're a movement of HIV, AIDS, long-term survivors, positive and negative, men and women. We honor the unique, profound experience and the trauma of having lived through the AIDS epidemic. And we're building community. We're interested in reclaiming our lives, ending isolation, and envisioning a future that we never dreamed of.
Yeah, I would add to that. When you don't expect to have a third act, when the third act arrives, figuring out who's going to play the parts and what it's going to look like and how you're going to perform that life now is really exciting. But in order to do that, you have to sort of come out of the dark spaces. You have to honor your past, give yourself credit, give the community credit for surviving what was unsurvivable, mourn your losses, and use that strength that you use to survive now for each other. And what I always say is that the experience of living through or HIV and AIDS, it existed in the context of community, a complex and sometimes confusing, sometimes contradictory, impossible experience. And now, in order to heal the hearts and the minds of the survivors, we want to be able to use that same strength for ourselves in order to move forward and maybe change the narrative a little bit about what does it mean to be a long-term survivor. You know, in the next number of years, it's going to be literally tens of thousands of people over the age of 50 living with HIV. And the message I think that's going to be important for the survivors of this generation is that you can have a great life. You're not forgotten. We're all here for each other. And whether you had the virus or not, you still may have buried your brother or your mother or your sister. You still may have lost many, many friends. You still may be struggling with lack of access to resources and opportunities. But when you come together with that same sort of vigor and that same passion, when it connects you to who you are a little bit, and you heal yourself in the context of community. And that is really powerful. I really like thinking of it that way.
And the power of the situation, as I've observed, the men and women who have been a part of this movement so far, is that the power and the challenge, we're all coming from very different places. And that's a lovely phrase to use, but in this case, there are people who are really ready to move and ready to do something, make something with the rest of their lives. There are others of us, as Carlton mentioned, it's the third act, and we didn't know it was a three-act play. And the question on our minds is, now what? And it's an amazing thing to stop and breathe for a moment and say, oh my gosh, I will be thinking about what's happening for the rest of my life. I hadn't planned on having the rest of my life. And some of us are in a place where we're really ready to move ahead and we're creating that future we never dreamed of. Others of us are envisioning of it. Others of us are thinking about maybe there will be a future. So it's that variety of places we're coming from is quite amazing. And I promise I'm not going to spend much time here dropping quotes, but I was driving over to see a friend a couple days ago and the Indigo Girls came on. And, you know, it had to stop me just so I could sing along with it. But then I realized there was one line in there that worked for me, that fit me, and I'd like to set behind, but still it fits right now. And she said that darkness has a hunger that's insatiable, and brightness has a voice that's hard to hear. And I thought, oh my gosh, quite amazing. I want to hear that voice. I really want to hear that voice, but that insatiable hunger for the darkness, it needs to be resisted. On the other hand, we're each coming from very different places and at different times too. So it's also quite amazing to come together with a community of people where we allow ourselves to be in the place we are at that moment. And it might be a different place tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I agree.
It's a bit crazy making, but it's actually wonderful to have the permission to be who I am today.
Yeah. I agree. I think one of the things I really love about the group when we get together, and you know, we're a movement in the sense that we are coming up with different ways for people to interact, and it's coming from the group as we structure ourselves a little bit more and we respond to what the community needs. But we have a coffee on Saturdays between 1 and 3 at the Fox and Hounds down in Old Town. And we never know who is going to come. And it's always sort of a surprise. It's sort of like a guest star on the sitcom, right? And here they come. And and they share, and men and women, all different ages, and they come sometimes to share about someone that they love who changed their life, who is not with us anymore. They don't come so much to memorialize so much. They come to celebrate the impact that these lives had to make them who they are today. And in telling those stories, there's a lot of strength. And I personally love that. And we sit around and chat, and we talk about all kinds of things you might talk about at a coffee.
Sometimes we talk about bowling.
Bowling. Sometimes we talk about boys. Sometimes we talk about how well we are or are not being served in the community by organizations whose, you know, funding is geared towards more of the medical and less of the psychosocial. And that's frustrating, as much as our numbers are growing. But we work to change that by making our voices heard. And that's why having you invite us here is so wonderful.
Yeah, thank you again.
This is a reflection. What you're doing is a reflection of a movement that's happening all over the country. And it's so nice to be invited back into the conversation again, you know, with, I think we're too special, but some of the men that I see and the women and the people that I meet in Let's Kick Ass and the national movement and the local movement are people that are sort of heroes to me. And when I tested positive, I thought, well, I tested positive. This is not a great experience, but I'm going to go and I'm going to find all of those awesome activists, those ACT UP guys. Larry Kramer's going to come out and meet me personally and tell me it's going to be okay. And when I went to have that experience, many of those people were gone. And it was so hard to find them. Some were isolating themselves just to survive. Some were in the trenches. Some were sick. And now when I get together with this group, I meet people like Jim, and I meet other people in our membership who are my heroes. And we laugh together, we hold each other accountable, and we figure out a way forward that is imperfect, but certainly dynamic.
This idea of meeting other people who are a wide range of humanity, to me, one of the things I'm enjoying the most is meeting people in different ages. There's a man who I've been getting to know who told me that he is 76. And I'm not very good at guessing ages. I'm not sure that I would have guessed that. But it gave me an opportunity to say, I think I am planning on trying to live another 10 years, maybe more. But maybe that's what I'm going to look like in 10 years. I wouldn't mind being this man. I like his spirit. I like his interests. I like where he's going. I can start envisioning that I'm going to be alive 10 years from now. And that really hadn't been my frame of reference. And the reference had not really been that I'm going to be dead, too. It's just everything is in front of you is immediate, what needs now. And the moment to be able to drop back and say, maybe I'm going to be in my 70s, who knows? And then there's another man that I'm getting to know who his birthday was at our last get-together. He was 40. And it's not lost on me, he's young enough to be my son. And it's just absolutely amazing being with people when there's this level of mutual respect and that we can talk about the important things and we can be frivolous. We can have fun and enjoy each other too.
I had someone ask me, well, how long do you have to have been affected or infected to qualify to be a long-term survivor? And it was an interesting idea because we thought, well, how would you exactly measure something like that? And there's no litmus test, because each person's story is so different. If that's how you identify, and you might not have had the virus, you may have grown up and lost your dad. You're a long-term survivor. And HIV has touched you in a way that's profound. And to be able to come someplace, because most times in the past, people who are HIV negative, you know, they didn't have access to services. They didn't have access to the same sort of support mechanisms because there was a limited amount and they needed to go to the people who were ill. It doesn't mean that trauma and damage weren't experienced. So it's really nice when those people identify and say, hey, I am part of this community and there's part of this story in me that I need to process a little bit because my future is also affected. That particularly is something I really enjoy.
Might be worthwhile just for one moment to look at the name of this organization, because it is fun and punchy, and Let's Kick Ass, and we play with it too. We play with it. We allow ourselves to, as we're looking at systems that may be working well, maybe are not working well at all. The notion of let's speak up and let's kick some ass, we use that. We work with that. But I think it's also important to note that as it is originally conceived, let's kick ass. ASS is an acronym. It's an abbreviation for AIDS Survivor Syndrome. And it's a concept that is new, and it's not something that arrived out of Portland, even though I've noticed we're all sort of wondering, didn't we invent this? Isn't this a concept? Maybe we didn't name it. Maybe we didn't know. Somebody else in San Francisco, frankly, the good folks in San Francisco, put shape to the concept, named it, help us have words that we could use to talk about it. But the overall construct of having experienced, for some of us, more than 30 years of non-ending trauma, that has impact. And it is more than just a matter of, oh my gosh, all this happened, I need to strengthen myself and get rested and get back onto it. It's completely changed the frame of reference. And so having some idea of this new concept of AIDS Survivor Syndrome, which actually is drawn from an old concept that was constructed from, originally it was attributed to Dr. William Nederland, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And he was describing what the survivors of the death camps were going through 16 years after the Holocaust had ended, that a long-standing, unending trauma where there's not a moment to stop and process the loss, to stop and say, oh my gosh, what's happening? As that's happening, we're aging. And all of a sudden, 15, 20, 30 years later, I am an older man. I'm no longer 35 years old, and yet here I am now. What do I make of this? And so,
yeah.
Carlton, you want to talk about AIDS Survivor Syndrome?
Well, I'd love to. AIDS Survivor Syndrome, its origin is important. And when we're talking about this, the generation of this term, and its implications, you have to put a shout out to a man named Tez Anderson. And Tez is the founder of Let's Kick Ass .org in San Francisco. And I went down there for their first long-term survivor summit, and he was kind enough to invite me to come down to do like a guest speaker. And I got to spend some time with him, and he's sort of a strapping, handsome guy with these great tattoos, and he is a very open book, and he shared with me, you know, about feeling depressed and really having trouble sort of living the quality of life that he wanted to live, and really didn't like how he was feeling about himself and his relationships and the world, and it had been really bottling up. And he had gone to a lot of places to try to find some help, and he really couldn't find the help that he needed. And he was telling me this story, and I asked him, you know, how did you come up with this AIDS Survivor Syndrome? And he said he was watching television, and it was a special on men and women who had come back from active duty who had been serving in wars. And it was like a panel on one of those talk shows where they were saying, I couldn't sleep, I had depression and anxiety, I was emotionally numb, I had flashes of anger, I felt hopeless, I didn't have a sense of future orientation. Many of them had dipped into substances. Personality changes, they had guilt about surviving where maybe their comrades had not. Their relationships were rocky. They engaged in other sort of high-risk behaviors. And there was an incredibly high rate of suicide. And Tez told me, of course, watching, I don't know what it was, probably like Oprah or something. And he said, that's me. That's what happened to me. And he began to put it together that AIDS Survivor Syndrome is a unique form of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is over a long term of experiencing, a long term time of experiencing trauma. And from there, he came up with AIDS Survivor Syndrome. It tells a funny story about being in the shower and taking a shower and saying, AIDS Survivor Syndrome, what am I going to do about that? And he goes, we got to kick its ass. Ass! And I laughed and I said, you know, of course, HIV being somehow connected in people's minds in the U.S. to the gay community has to have an organization for long-term survivors with ass in the title. But that just kind of shows that resilience also means humor, means being able to reflect on yourself and your community with a level of levity and seriousness. And boy, he picked a great term because people remember.
One thing I want to recall is that, what was this? Was actually, it was almost a month ago. We were attending, Carlton and I and actually 30 other people attended a workshop that we produced at an event for Sage Metro Portland. And we talked about long-term survivors and the various issues of it. We broke into small groups. The group that I was in, we were looking at the characteristics of AIDS survivor syndrome. Carlton just laid this out, the specific types of distress that can be experienced. And there were a few in the group that came up with the question, is it heretical? Is it absolutely possible for us to say that anything good came of this? And we all agreed in the group that if you do the cost-benefit analysis, no, this was a real losing proposition. But if we can find anything good that came of it, let's not lose that as well. And so they asked that this definition of AIDS survivor syndrome be extended so that we talk about a few things that also need to be part of this. And the folks in this group talked about that they had an acute sense of personal capacity and resilience against all odds. And they were able to apply that in elements of their life right now. And that's good for them. That's supporting them as they go forward. They say that one man specifically, and I believe I've got the exact words here because it just was stunning to hear it. He said that he has an appreciation for every dawn after years of preparing to die the next day. It was absolutely amazing to hear. And then I looked at the body language of the folks we were sitting with,
yeah.
And everybody's going, yeah, me too. Yeah, I didn't know we could say that. And then finally, we talked quite a bit about, we did get the opportunity to see what a community could do when we are brought together and we push to the edge and we have to do something to make it. And it might not be pretty and it may not be graceful, but you do what you have to do to get through it. And they were thankful for what community can do. So it's quite a complex set of characteristics, but I'm noticing, much like what Carlton just said, that people will hear this and you watch the body language and they go, yeah, that sounds like me. That sounds like me.
One of the things that I do is I have another nonprofit that I work with, and it's specifically to take people who are living with HIV to do international service work. And it's sort of my response, because I come from an international background, to engage long-term survivors in their civic and global selves, you know, to sort of heal on that level. And what I propose, or what I believe, is that people who are long-term survivors have this resilience and this insight, and it's not being utilized well. And I took a group to serve in northern Thailand of survivors, and one of the gentlemen was 65, and he was the oldest person with HIV that a northern Thai village had ever met, and where there was significant HIV. And he told me about asking a 16-year-old, well, you know, he was encouraged to tell her to take her meds because she didn't want to. And she asked him, oh my God, you're 65? Are you going to live to 80? And he came back and relayed the story to me, and his tears were in his eyes. And he said, no one in all the years has ever asked me what my future plans were. And he said, I looked back at her and I said, yes, I'm going to live to 80. And he believed it. And it was a wonderful moment. But I think one of the things about resiliency is that it needs to have purpose. You know, this is a generation of people who have had a foot in liberation and a foot in oppression in very, very different ways. And the ones who have come through it, there's wisdom in this group. And I see it every minute I'm with my peers. And there's a place in our culture and in our country and in the organizations that serve us and in non-HIV related things for that sort of wisdom and experience. We're unfortunate experts on death and dying. But the flip side of being an expert on death and dying is that maybe you know a little bit about living too. Maybe a little bit about compassion. And maybe a little bit about humor. We laugh a lot when we're together because there's a lot to celebrate.
I wonder if it's okay with the radio here to do an advertisement and let the listeners know if they want to be a part of this, how they can join.
Please do.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to say that you become a member of Let's Kick Ass PDX simply by making a commitment to our purpose and joining our contact list. There's no money involved. We don't have a checking account. We're not looking for anything other than people to engage and make a commitment to building community. Any information that's submitted to us is kept confidential. It's used for our internal purposes. We don't let anybody else use it. We don't sell it. We don't give it to agencies, to nobody, ever, never. So, drawing on one of my past backgrounds as a web project manager, I know very important to have a URL that's memorable. It's easy to remember. So, for your listeners, I hope you'll remember this. Let's Kick Ass PDX. Please join us. Go find our contact form on lka-pdx.org. We would love to have you on our contact list. We would love to send you information.
I think the other invitation is, because we're a movement, we collect the ideas of many of the people who come to us. And Jim and I are facilitating this process along with another group of, very dedicated members. But the idea is that the people who come in will say, I'd really like to start, I'd like to have a host a conversation at my house. And maybe that conversation might be about some aspect of something they live through. And they invite the other members to come and have that conversation. It might be one of the things that we're doing right now. We have a performance group. And I'm really proud of it because that's the background that I have. Jim's in it, I'm in it, and others are in it. And we are prompting each other to write about our lives and write about things that are important with the idea that we'll put them to in a performance space. So there's a lot of creativity and there's room for really any possibility. Because we need the community to be doing something diverse. Because right now, if you're a long-term survivor, there are places you can get medical checkup. You can get help with getting your insurance. You can get a lot of things. But there isn't really any organized or easily accessible services for social services or social support. And that's why we're doing it for each other. So the diversity of people coming in is really key. I'd love to see there be a Let's Kick Ass band. Or, I don't know.
Well, music is, of course, an obvious talent that's really valuable in creating movement. I was working earlier today in contacting people for setting up a new in-home conversation group for people who want to get into conversations a bit deeper than what can be done at a coffee social, at a place where we get together and we're talking to each other in a broad social public environment, but at home where we can drill into topics a bit deeper. And one man said, I have a lot of experience around promotion and publicity and advertising. I can help get people there. Another man said, well, I have a house. I can make room and space for us. Another said that I am a somewhat professional facilitator and I'd like to build and strengthen my skills. Maybe I can contribute that. Another man said, I think I probably have the most powerful and valuable resource of all. I'm a pastry chef. And so we really believe that, it's going to take all the talents that we have to pull together.
It always comes down to pastry. That's another part of why Let's Kick Ass is Portland is so important, is that many people are they're healthy and they're vigorous and they want to get back into it. And they want to, try out some skills. Maybe we want to swap some talents that we have and train each other. Maybe to say, well, I could do that. Maybe I could decide to go to work again. Maybe I could open a business. Maybe I could paint. It's not for us to say what you choose. It's just really an honor and fun to be part of the process of watching people unfold. Because when others unfold, you have a tendency to mimic that and unfold yourself. And I don't think there's anything better. So if you ask, what's the good that comes out of the tragic? The good that comes out of the tragic is what you choose to make it. And we're choosing community, resilience, and planning a really great future.
So I'm just hoping that some of the listeners would be interested in engaging with us, or at least giving it a try, learning more about it. And so once again, they can go to lka-pdx.org. I'm the one who worked in advertising.
And we'll link to that on our Facebook. Find us on Facebook, Out Loud Radio. be very happy to have you sign up and get updates on what we're doing. We're here every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. with Out Loud Radio. And let's kick ass. You guys hang out with folks nearly every weekend, is that right?
On Saturdays from 1 to 3 at the Fox and Hounds in Old Town, which is, you can get coffee and it's comfy. And they have some breakfast if you want it. And it's just a nice place for us to meet in a supportive environment. And I have to say, Fox and Hounds has been, they're just wonderful. And they make us, they make us feel not just welcomed, but loved. And they sort of fuss over us a little bit. I really love that.
And if you go to the website, you can learn some of the other things we do. But coming to the coffee, just to drop in, have a cup of coffee with us and get into some conversation, it's a great way to learn about some of the other social activities and some of the activism, some of the other work that we're going to do.
The one thing I wanted to point out is what we rallied about last year on June 5th of this past year was the first recognition in the country for Long-Term Survivor Day. And Portland was the first city to make that proclamation. And that was, I believe, Multnomah County, correct?
That's correct.
And soon after, a week later, San Francisco also did the same. So Portland has been first in a lot of ways. We're an awesome city, and we're an awesome community. And I love the fact that Portland was first with this day, and Jim and I and a whole group of people came together and support from different agencies and different organizations to make it happen. And it's really cool that Let's Kick Ass helped make that happen, and it was first here. And we want to keep that momentum going.
Let me just wrap by saying thank you, KBOO. I really appreciate this a whole bunch.
Thank you so much, KBOO.
You are welcome. I am humbled by the work you're doing with Let's Kick Ass PDX. Thank you so much, Jim and Carlton, for being with us today.
Alan, it's my pleasure.
Alan, good night.
Good night. I want to close out by thanking everybody who was involved in Thrill the World Portland this year. We had almost 100.